Good afternoon. I want to thank everybody for joining us. This is Brad Woodhouse with Protect Our Care. If you're on this call, you clearly know the topic, which is that tomorrow the House of Representatives and Democratic states defending the Affordable Care Act are filing briefs, the first briefs in the case that is going to the Supreme Court, the case that was brought by President Trump and Republican attorney generals and some governors across the country to do in the courts what they couldn't do legislatively, which is to do away with the Affordable Care Act. Not part of it, not repeal and replace, but to rip it out, root and branch, every single bit of it. These briefs are being filed tomorrow by the House of Representatives and Democratic states. There are Meeke briefs on the Democratic side, or I should say on the defense of the ACA side by groups next week. And then as we go on in the summer, the plaintiffs that want to rip apart this health care law in the middle of this pandemic will get to file their briefs. And the Supreme Court very likely will hear arguments in this case before the election. Not likely to get a decision before the election, but likely to hear arguments. It's extraordinary to me, and I'm sure everyone on this call, particularly the senator and the former senator, that in the midst of this pandemic, when every state's governor, attorney general, all of us that are involved in the response to the coronavirus, those of us dealing with it in our personal lives and our professional lives, that we're having to spend time on this issue, that with the millions of people who are covered, with the hundreds of millions, 135 million people who have protections from pre-existing conditions in the current law, and all of the other benefits this law provides, that we're having to take time away from the response to the worst pandemic in 100 years, a pandemic made far worse as a result of the president's failure of leadership and preparation to deal with this partisan lawsuit to rip away American healthcare. And so that's what this call is about, and I'm really honored to be joined, as I said, by one of the stars of the United States Senate today and one of the stars of the United States Senate from recent past. And so with that, I want to turn it over to our first speaker, the great United States Senator who has been so strong on these issues, particularly in the Judiciary Committee, as she's questioned people who have come before that committee for confirmation and for other reasons, Senator Kamala Harris of California.
Thank you, Brad, very much. And I want to just thank you for all the work you're doing with Protect Our Care. The name of the organization speaks volumes about the work you're doing every day to make sure that everyone in our country is protected and taken care of and cared for. I want to just also just acknowledge and thank Senator Feingold. I am a huge fan of your work, and including your current work at the American Constitution Society, so it's an honor to join you on this call. So let's just get right to it. Why do we need the Affordable Care Act? Well, we're in the middle of a public health crisis, a proportionate which we've never seen. And we are, all of us on a daily level, watching the ticker tape of the number of Americans who are dying, the number of Americans who are contracting the coronavirus, and the numbers continue to grow. We heard just in the last 24 hours that we may be looking at as many as 3,000 people a day in our country who will die, and it's not lost on anyone. That's basically the equivalent of the number of people we lost during 9/11. So this is a moment of crisis without any question, and it is a public health crisis. In addition, we have frontline workers who do not have protective equipment. Families across the country have lost their income, which means they have also, because they lost their jobs, lost their income, and therefore also have lost their health insurance. And they're not sure how they're going to be able to pay the bills or put food on the table. So now more than ever, it should be apparent to everyone that people need quality, affordable health care, and it is in our collective interest that they have it. And that's why protecting the Affordable Care Act is so important, especially now. And the ACA has literally been a lifesaver. 20 million more Americans now have health insurance. It has provided protections for 135 million people with pre-existing conditions. I, with my colleagues, have spent a lot of time in the last several weeks talking about pre-existing conditions in the context of racial disparities and how, in particular, black and brown communities have been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 because of pre-existing health conditions, all of which, of course, the Affordable Care Act and the beauty of its design sought to address. The ACA has expanded Medicare for 17 million people. It allowed 2.3 million young people to stay on their parents' insurance, and, of course, it lowered prescription drug costs for 12 million seniors. But all of that is in serious jeopardy today. And the Trump administration is attempting, with Bill Barr and lawyers in court, including in the United States Supreme Court, are attempting to have health care pulled out from under millions of people who are relying on it to alleviate their pain and sustain their lives. All of this during a public health crisis of global proportions. And let's be clear, history everyone remembers, and it's recent history. The Republicans, as part of a really partisan attempt and an agenda and strategy, have been fighting the ACA from the very beginning. Because, of course, we know Mitch McConnell, in his own words, wanted to make President Obama a one-term president. There has been a disregard for the fact that millions of people were given life-saving treatment and protections. But this was a political agenda where it was about winning political points and making sure that President Obama's signature piece of legislation, which many tried before in previous generations, that it would not help his legacy or be a part of his legacy in terms of the significance of his administration and his presidency. So there's been a game plan to do just that, and that is to vote dozens of times to repeal it and attempt to repeal it. But each time it failed, and I was honored in my earliest days of being a senator to be on the Senate floor at that early morning hour when the late, great John McCain took to the floor and with an incredible amount of courage and decisiveness pointed his thumb downward to say no, he was not going to play a political game with the health care of American people. And so this is that moment again, where all of us should be prepared to say, throw our thumbs down and say, no, do not play politics with the health and well-being of the American people, and in particular, in the midst of a health pandemic. And so when we look at where we are, we remember the recent history. We remember that repeal and replace agenda during my first year of the Senate when so many attempted to get rid of it. But the American people's voices were heard. And it was actually very affirming for me as a new senator to watch the bipartisan support among the American people, maybe not their elected representatives, but among the American people, to say, don't take away our health care. But yet, today, we're at a moment where Donald Trump's Department of Justice is poised to actively strike it down. And what that will mean is a number of things in the context of COVID-19. In the midst of this public health crisis, which requires medical attention for so many people, this lawsuit will risk health care for millions of people who will have their health coverage taken away. What they have now will be taken away. The Affordable Care Act benefited every American, and its destruction will have a most severe impact on our society's most vulnerable. Those who suffer the most are communities most at risk historically, and they are low-income communities, people with pre-existing conditions, as I've mentioned, seniors, and especially, as I've mentioned, people of color. In fact, you know the data, you know the statistics. African Americans are 40% more likely to have high blood pressure than their white counterparts. Black women are 3 times more likely to have lupus. 1 in 3 African American babies has the sickle cell trait. And sickle cell is particularly vulnerable to a respiratory virus. And in our American Indian and Alaska Native populations, they have a higher rate of diabetes than their white counterparts. So we know this is going to have a desperate impact and a disproportionate impact on some of our most vulnerable and historically vulnerable communities. And let's just I'll say this in closing. Let's just pause for a second and remember that these are not faceless columns on some spreadsheet. These are real people. And these are the people, many of whom are on the front lines. These are the people who are driving those trucks, who are working in grocery stores, who are taking care of the sick and aged. These are the people who are our neighbors and our friends, and it is our community. And so I stand in solidarity with the work of Brad Woodhouse and Protect Our Care and the work of Senator Feingold in saying that this is a matter that is not only about what is legally right and correct, but also what is morally right and correct. How dare this administration be in the highest court in the land trying to get rid of one of the best and smartest public policy initiatives we've seen in generations that relates to the health and well-being of the American people, and in particular at this moment in time. And I think we should all rise up and say, enough. If the president wants to be commander-in-chief and be the leader of our nation, this is the moment to say we should not be actively trying to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. And with that, I'll turn it over and back to Brad. Thank you.
Great. Senator Harris, thank you. And I just want to say one thing before I turn it over to Senator Feingold, and that is the idea that this is not faceless and that there are, you know, before we ever knew COVID, COVID-19, we were fighting this battle against the administration's efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, to sabotage it, to take it away in court. And we often call on people who have a pre-existing conditions, who gained coverage through the Affordable Care Act, to really tell their stories, because they are so important. I know you know they are. And now we will have, you know, when this is over, it will be somewhere in the millions of people who have a new pre-existing condition that, if this law goes away, would likely disqualify them from future coverage under the old rules of the game. And all of those people, of course, have faces and stories and lives and families. And thank you for lifting them up so much in your remarks.
Thank you, Brad.
With that, yeah, thank you, Senator Harris. With that, I'd like to turn it over to former Senator Russ Feingold. Senator Feingold is someone that I have known and been acquainted with since I was at the DSCC in 2004, working to get him reelected to the United States Senate. And of course, he was there for the battle that took place to get the Affordable Care Act passed. I was looking at a headline in an opinion piece that was written in Wisconsin that said Senator Feingold never wavered on his support for the Affordable Care Act, despite the number of the amount of incoming that he got politically for his support. And now Senator Feingold is president of the American Constitution Society, which I'm thrilled about. We have worked with the American Constitution Society. I have, in different walks of life, going back to trying to get Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court and working on the Gorsuch and Kavanaugh nominations and working on other issues related to access to voting and civil rights and the rights of people to have health care. And it's such a big get for the American Constitution Society. I'm so glad you're there and performing that service. So with that, let me turn it over to former Senator Russ Feingold.
Thank you, Brad. I have greatly enjoyed working with you over the years. I admire your dedication, so it's fun to be working with you again. And Senator Harris, it's an honor to be on the call with you. Your work on Judiciary Committee, as Brad mentioned, your role on the national stage, you are providing exceptional leadership. And frankly, I wish I could have served with you. It would have been great fun. So thank you for participating in this important phone call. The American Constitution Society wants to be a part of this call and this effort because we believe in the importance of the courts to the policymaking process. And as Senator Harris pointed out, so much work went into passing the Affordable Care Act, and now we have the courts potentially poised to completely undo it. I mean, President Obama had the courage to take this issue when there were so many other things going on and make sure he got this done. It culminated 70 years of frustration for the American people in trying to have health care for all Americans. I remember when I was first old enough to vote for president that Ted Kennedy wrote his famous book, In Critical Condition, that was about this very issue. And so sure enough, this finally gets done. People always say they never get anything done in Washington, but this got done. It was very significant, and the courts are being potentially utilized to undo this important work. It reminds me of how somebody that Senator Harris already mentioned, John McCain and I, worked together for 8 years to pass the McCain-Feingold bill on campaign finance, and we did, and the courts were with us at first, but then the courts start undoing the will of the people with regard to campaign finance reform dating back almost a century. So the courts are incredibly important here. And one of the ruthless aspects of the opponents of affordable care is that they are willing to look around with shoddy legal arguments and shop around to find some judge who will side with those arguments. Add to it the fact that in an unprecedented way, the current administration is not defending the law of the land. The law of the land is the Affordable Care Act. Instead, they're pushing the other way to actually take away health care for the 20 million people who would lose coverage during this very, very frightening pandemic. They didn't succeed in the first round, NFIB versus Sebelius. As we all remember, Chief Justice Roberts sided with the majority 5-4 to say no. The elements of the Affordable Care Act that had to do with the individual mandate were essentially a tax in the view of the majority, and it was not an unconstitutional use of congressional power. So that effort failed. So then the second thing they tried to do was a statutory interpretation approach to gut the ability of the states to give health care to people in King versus Burwell. And that didn't work either. So they went back, as Senator Harris pointed out, and tried everything they could to undo this in Congress. But thanks to Senator McCain and others, that failed. So now they're back with the shoddy legal arguments in Texas versus the United States. And here what they're trying to do, again, is to somehow take the idea of the individual mandate and say because they've eliminated the individual mandate, that means the whole law has to fall. But that's not the way the law works in this area. The law has to do with the concept of severability. And what that means is if the court is presented with a complicated piece of legislation, and they find a portion of it to be unconstitutional, they are supposed to make every effort to sever the unconstitutional part from the constitutional part. Now, of course, they make the argument, the opponents, they say, well, one federal judge in Florida said, well, all the parts of the bill have to all be together because it's like a finely tuned Swiss watch. Actually, if you take a look at it, it's pretty obvious that most of the provisions of the bill in terms of quantity do not relate to the individual mandate. So there's no reason why the court should take this argument that if one portion is unconstitutional, the whole thing is. Just to give you an illustration, here are things that, in my view, are not directly connected to the individual mandate, and I think it would be absurd for the court to strike these down. But if they did, as Senator Harris was saying, it would be disastrous. 135 million Americans with pre-existing conditions would no longer be protected. That is not about the individual mandate. It would take away Medicaid expansion for 17 million people. 12 million seniors would have to pay more for prescription drugs because the Medicare donut hole will be reopened. That's not about the individual mandate. 2.3 million adult children will no longer be able to stay on their parents' insurance. I remember what a popular provision that was. That does not have to do with the individual mandate. Insurance companies will be able to charge women 50% more than men. And there's a lot of other wonderful provisions in the bill, such as key support for rural hospitals. All of these things would fall on the argument that somehow if one portion is considered unconstitutional, the whole thing has to fall. I think the justices know that all the way back to the Alaska Airlines versus Brock case in 1987, that's not the route they should go. And I certainly hope that the court will see it that way. But we need to alert people to the fact that this is not a technical legal argument, even though it may sound like one, it has enormous real consequences for the health of the American people. And so I look forward to answering any questions about this, but I think it's very important for people to see exactly what's being asked of the court here, and what's being asked of the court is extremely unreasonable. Thanks, Brad.
Great, Senator Feingold, thank you. And I just want to say that, you know, there's been a lot of questions, and I know that this question has come up in hearings when they're still having those on the Hill about, you know, what is President Trump, what is the Department of Health and Human Services, what is this administration's plan, should they be successful in this lawsuit? And I think it was sometime before we all got on lockdown that they just admitted they don't have one. They do not have a plan. I don't think anyone believes that the Supreme Court is going to rewrite the Affordable Care Act. So if they do strike it down in its entirety, the next day, there is no plan to deal with the 135 million Americans who are now protected from discrimination from insurance companies based on having a pre-existing condition. There's no plan for the 17 million Americans who have gained health insurance coverage through Medicaid expansion. And there may be no recourse for those states which have expanded Medicaid to continue to have that expansion and have that population covered and a large share of that covered by the federal government. And all of this, no plan, ripping apart the law, root and branch, all would occur and likely occur, certainly would occur while this pandemic is still an issue, and we might be in what people are saying would be the next phase of this pandemic. So I want to thank Senator Harris and Senator Feingold for bringing focus to this. We need to make sure that these justices know, you know, what's at stake, not just what they'll reading these briefs and see or hear in the oral arguments, but that there is real concern among the American people about the consequences of this partisan lawsuit, which for President Trump is, in my view, is nothing more than a vendetta against President Obama. I don't think anyone believes that he understands how health insurance works, or he understands how health insurance markets work, or even what coverage for a pre-existing condition is. I don't think he's attuned to those type of details. So this is a partisan lawsuit shot to a partisan judge, and here we are dealing with this in the middle of this pandemic. So with that, I want to turn it over to Whitney to start the process of questions. I've received a note that Senator Harris has had to jump for Senate business because Mitch McConnell wants to stack the courts with more unqualified haters of the health care law and other important issues. The Senate is in session, and she's had the hot, but Senator Feingold and I are available to answer any questions that folks may have. Whitney?
Thanks, Brad. At this time, if there are questions for our speakers, you can press *3 on your phone to enter our Q&A queue. Again, if you have a question, please press *3. All right, our first question is going to come from Zach Cohen at the National Journal.
Zach, you are live. Hi, thanks for doing this call. I really appreciate it. Question for Senator Feingold. Given his expertise on judicial confirmations, the Senate is slated tomorrow to hold a hearing for Judge Justin Walker, who in the past has made it clear he doesn't believe that the Affordable Care Act is constitutional as written. I'm curious if we can get your thoughts on what it means that the Senate is having this nomination hearing right now and what his confirmation would mean for the D.C. Circuit and its jurisdiction over the federal government.
Well, I'm afraid that this just illustrates how tone-deaf the Senate leader and the president are to try to jam through any nomination at this point, frankly, in the middle of this pandemic, and in particular one that is very controversial. This deserves real scrutiny, and I think obviously if the shoe were on the other foot, there's no way the Republicans would consider it appropriate to try to jam through this nomination at this point. And when you throw in the fact that he's already stated his opinion on the legislation, It's just simply inappropriate on all counts. This is not the highest priority for this country at this time. It's unfair. It's taking advantage of a catastrophe to try to further pack the courts. So I think the process is wrong and should not be done at this time.
Quick follow-up on that, if I may. Do you expect him to offer to recuse himself from any cases revolving around the ACA?
I really don't know. You know, I think obviously it sounds like he should, but I can't tell you what I expect he'll do.
Thank you.
Thanks, Max. Whitney, additional questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Jonathan Sadowski at upnorthnewswi.com. Jonathan, you're live.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for doing this call. Senator Feingold, so I'm calling from Wisconsin. So in terms of this lawsuit, you know, what is at stake here, you know, both in the middle of a pandemic, but just in a larger scale, you know, what is really at stake here for a state like Wisconsin, where you have such a urban and rural mix where you'll really see the whole state affected should the Affordable Care Act be struck down?
Well, I'm up north too. I'm up in Wisconsin right now. Well, obviously it would have tremendous consequences. And let me just say that even more broadly than the healthcare issue itself, this is about the legitimacy of our courts. The way in which the Wisconsin election was distorted by the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court, acting on a partisan basis in a way that was very frightening and actually had potential health impacts on Wisconsinites who went out to vote because they were determined to vote. That illustrates what happens when the courts are manipulated in that way. This Affordable Care Act legislation attempt to destroy it is another way in which the courts are being utilized or attempted to be utilized to undo something that the American people and people of Wisconsin have fought for forever. In the 18 years I was in the United States Senate, I did 72 town meetings, listening sessions, every single year. So I did like 1,200 of them. By far, the greatest request was fundamental health care reform, the exact thing that President Obama mentioned. And specifically, there'd be a whole lot of Wisconsinites who would lose their pre-existing condition coverage. There'd be Wisconsinites who would lose their Medicaid coverage. Wisconsin seniors would probably have to pay more for their prescription drugs. Adult children, people who, many of whom are in college and already having a hell of a time because of what's happened to their university situation, all of a sudden they may not be able to stay on their parents' insurance. And so these are all things, including the key support for rural hospitals, which is very important all over Wisconsin. All of these things could happen and particularly damage a state that has both urban and rural areas, such as Wisconsin.
Senator Feingold, just a few numbers. 2.4 million Wisconsinites have a pre-existing condition, including 305,000 children, almost 1.2 million women, and 630,000 between ages 55 and 64. I mean, just 2.4 million, and that number I'm sure has risen in the coronavirus era. 153,000 people in Wisconsin could lose coverage that they have through the Affordable Care Act. I mean, these are mind-blowing numbers of people who would be affected by this partisan lawsuit if just in your state. So I mean, it really does hit home.
That's right.
Whitney, do we have additional questions?
Yep, our next question is going to come from Amy Lotvin at Inside Health Policy. Amy, you are live.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for doing this call. And this is a question, I guess, both for Brad and Senator Feingold. Earlier today, CNN reported that Attorney General Barr had been, I guess, there was a meeting and Barr wanted to sort of walk it back again and say, you know, switch their position and not call for striking the entire law. I know they've bounced around several times. I'm just sort of wondering if you could speak to that. They didn't get into the specifics of what he may want them to keep or not. So I'm not really, I can't have specifics, but just wondering generally if you can speak to that.
Senator, I can start unless you want to.
Go ahead, Brad.
So just a little history here that I know, Amy, you know, but the first time in the spring or early summer of 2018, when the Justice Department weighed in support of this lawsuit, they confined their approach to be that what should be declared unconstitutional was not the whole law, but it should be the protection for people with pre-existing conditions and all of the essential health benefits and other protections against insurance company abuses. So if what the Attorney General is proposing is going back to a position that would eliminate protections for 135 million with pre-existing conditions and eliminate all of the essential health benefits and protections, which include having women be treated fairly under our health care and insurance laws, along with men to be treated equitably, then I don't know that. And I saw the coverage was the Attorney General was making a political argument. He said, "Well, if we're for repealing the entire law, that's bad politics." Well, let me just say this: in 2018, they were for the court overturning the parts of the law that protect people with existing conditions and all of the other essential health benefits and insurance protections. And they lost the House of Representatives on that position. So I don't know that he's got his political antenna quite in the right place. That's number one. And number two, and Senator Feingold will know more on this than me, but it really would be, I mean, it's really just a public relations issue if that's what occurs, because the lawsuit is before the Supreme Court. The other states, including Texas, and all of the other plaintiff states, there's no indication that they're going to back off their position that the entire law falls. So it won't change what is going to be under consideration by the Supreme Court. It would still be the Supreme Court considering the case that was brought and adjudicated by the judge in Texas, where he said the entire law should go away. And I think the last thing I'll say here is I just believe this is Bill Barr doing a little CYA. He seems to think this is better politics for Trump, even though it will have no effect on the actual arguments, even though the politics of it in 2018, where they lost the House on this position, and he's leaked out his position that he has discussed in the administration. Also, there's no indication that recommendation is going to be listened to. But anyway, Senator Feingold, I'll stop there.
Thank you.
Well, Brad just said it perfectly. I mean, this isn't a negotiation on the budget between the White House and some congressmen. This is a case before going to the United States Supreme Court. It's entirely inappropriate for the Attorney General to be manipulating this. The administration has one job here, and that is that they're supposed to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. And one of the ways in which you do that is to defend the laws of the United States before the courts. And they are refusing to do that, or they're trying to bargain, apparently. This is wrong. And so what you have here is a very shoddy legal arguments in favor of striking down the whole law. And you have the possibility that the court will not go along with this attempt. And if they do, I think it's a very dangerous moment for the court itself. Similar to Bush v. Gore, Citizens United, and other decisions that call into question the very credibility of the Supreme Court, if it's willing to do such an extreme and really lawless thing as to strike down the entire law, which I can see that the administration is getting a little edgy about that, but that's not where we are. Where we are is this case is going to the court. They're going to have to decide. I think that the administration should simply, if they want to change course on this and back off, so be it, but they shouldn't sort of try to split it in two.
Yep. Great. Thank you, Senator Feingold. Additional questions, Whitney?
That's all the questions we have today.
All right. Well, Senator Feingold, do you have any closing comments?
Just that this is such a service, Brad, to bring this out. It's so hard to get attention to anything else that's going on right now because of the tremendous coronavirus tragedy. Of course, this does relate to that tragedy, but it relates to the broader question of whether these the courts of our country, particularly the Supreme Court, is going to be on the level in a situation like this. So this is a very important decision for the health care of all Americans, but also for the credibility of our legal system. Thanks,
Brad. Well, I want to thank you, Senator Feingold. It's great to get reacquainted and to have an opportunity to work on this. I think so highly of the American Constitution Society and the work that it does, and know that you're going to take that work even to a higher plane. And it's so important in this ongoing fight. Well, with that, I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be continuing to communicate on this throughout the coming days and months, and obviously we'll be communicating on this tomorrow as these briefs are actually filed. So stay tuned, and thanks everybody, and have a great day.